accession number 17117, reel 9.
Mr. Croker, reel 9.
Yes. She was in fact sunk, not by bombs, but by torpedoes. She had been sunk by submarine. U-boats had started to creep into the Mediterranean, and we did have ourselves a little contretemps, if you like, with what we thought was a U-boat in Bugi Bay. They had sunk one of our sweepers about two nights before, one of the old Jarine class sweepers, and one of the ploys, it seems, that they'd surface and fire a flare, almost as if survivors needed picking up from somewhere or other. You go towards it, and they'd use the flare to silhouette you and then torpedo you. Whether this happened on our chummy ship, I know not. But anyway, there it was. As I say, it was some relief that we found ourselves then going back to Gib. And we arrived in Gib then just for that Christmas of 1942. And I remember that we were feeling then, what's going to happen. Because Gibraltar at that time, and I can remember this, another particular instance, the cruiser, a 525 cruiser, the Sirius, coming in and into Gib, and I don't know what had hit her in the stern, it might well have been a bomb, but the bows had been sheared off. This is a 5.25 light cruiser, a 5.25 inch gun cruiser. The bows were missing and she was pushing. I mean, when I said steamed in, she just like sidled, come, you know, just barely pushing forward, making about two or three knots, if that. And the stern was missing to the extent that the quarterdeck was gone, but the upper part of the quarterdeck was gone and sliced off, but the A bracket, if you like, which holds the torpedo shaft, was still in position on the keel. And what you could see would be this thing just easing itself through the water where the ship ended, as it were, that is, with a bit that's been cut off of the quarterdeck, and the wash starting some 20 or 30 feet behind as the screw just turned and ticked over. And Gibraltar was quite a surprising place at that time, because I suppose inevitably you had all the old crocs coming in there, and they were absolute full stretch, the dockyard, putting ships into dock and patching them up. And we just lay there then, we had Christmas, and we had quite a relaxed time there. And they had one or two runs ashore, such as they were, because, of course, there's nothing very much to be had in the way of beer and that sort of thing, because of so many troops on the rock. But it meant then that after Christmas, we had a signal, and this was a signal for which we had been somewhat hoping for, that we joined up then with an old Crocs convoy and made ourselves our way back to UK. And that was quite a sight, really, when you bear in mind not only was a convoy of some merchant ships, but of naval ships coming back to UK yards for repairs which could not be undertaken in Gibraltar. And of course, we, for our part, we were quite well off in that we had the patch on this outside, which had been put on in old years by the French. And we had a quarter deck, and, you know, back aft we were all in the shambles. But we were not too badly off. But anyway, we made our way back then, and we went into Smith's Dock in North Shields. This, as I say, or I said earlier, was welcome relief, as it were, It almost seems a coward's way out, I suppose, that here we are catching a blighty one, if you like, in First World War terms, because of our 7 inshore squadron that started off in that North African landing, operating from Algiers to Bone, the law of averages is such that we were the first to be hit and covered. Then, of course, as I said, the other one torpedoed. But one by one, they were all knocked off, and by the spring of 42, I don't know that there was one of them left. They'd all been hit in some kind of way or other. Anyway, here we were in Smith's Dock in North Shields, and as soon as we went into dock, always, of course, is how much leave are we going to get? And it transpired we were going to get a month's leave, and we were able to do this by working in what is known as cruising watches, where normally at sea at wartime you tend to try to work in cruising watches, that's with 3 watches, so that you'd have 1 watch on and 2 off. But normally it works out that you're in defence watches with half on and half off, and that's rather a tighter routine. But when we came to this leave thing, I must say an ingenious routine was worked out by our coxswain and I believe First Lieutenant as well, whereby though we were only going to be in dock for 6 weeks, we were due to be in that dock, we were able to squeeze a month's leave out of it, in so much that one could go on leave for a full month, one watch would go for a fortnight, come back for a fortnight, and go on leave for another fortnight, so they would get their month in that way. And so we felt we were quite in clover, because to have a month's leave during the war from a destroyer was rather like utopia. It really was. I mean, we felt, gosh, we can call Queen Aunties who were on this, that this is absolutely gorgeous. But we came back after our leave, or I came back after my month's leave, and thought, well, off we're going to go again. And I hadn't been back a week when, of course, we learned that Bremen was to be no more. That Bremen was going to be turned over to the Greek Navy and was going to become His Majesty's Greek or Hellenic ship, or what it is, Themistocles. And the whole ship's company then disbanded. And that was somewhat sad, because she was a very happy ship. As I've said earlier on the question of picking up survivors, it's a kind of thing. Picking up survivors, as I've mentioned, developed where, you know, some of the ship's company would go out with lines on and pull people in. This kind of, it was born out of adversity. And I'll never forget, in fact, when we commissioned the Bremen alongside the war at Alexander Stevens in Govan in Glasgow, that here I am, I'm ex-Prince of Wales. I was then just 21 when I joined Bremen, that's it. I was 22 in the August. But I was 21, and I was relatively an old salt, because the captain cleared lower deck when we commissioned the Bremen in June of 42, of all those who'd never been to sea before. And about 90% of the ship's company mustered on the forecastle, they'd never been to sea before. And here we are now in barely, well, 6 months later, and the whole thing is going to come to an end. So there was that degree of sadness. And, of course, the captain himself, I mean, he was a mere lieutenant in naval terms. He was a very good, I mean, there's no doubt he didn't spare anyone. I mean, he could cuss like a trooper, and I mean, he could, for instance, that instance with the first lieutenant failing to hit the Deucalion, he was able to make his he didn't spare the first lieutenant at one bit, and he drove himself as well. But we were very sad that anyway we had an esprit de corps, as it were, a rapport, whatever, call it what you may, but that ship was quite a happy ship, and there it was, it came to an end. But for my part, I was very much more fortunate. Being a technical side, I was kept on to hand over to the Greek Navy, and there started then about, I think this lasted for about 4 months, which pleased me and those who stood by and handed over the Greeks enormously, because to have this pierced out during the wartime was in fact the life of Riley. And I lived in Diggs in Newcastle, or in North Shields rather, and went down to the ship each day. I'm getting a bit, if I may. Yeah. And as I say, this meant really living life as a civilian, coming in each day from Diggs into the shipyard, going about the ship, seeing that various repairs were being carried out. And one of the problems, of course, was not only it had to be carried out to the satisfaction of the dockyard and to, in my case, myself, that's the gunnery material, but of course to the satisfaction of the Greeks. And we found that the Greeks were most pernickety, and I can give one example. When we had some gunnery stores brought aboard, and I was there by the funnel with the gunner who had stayed, and the chief gunner's mate, myself, and we were going through these stores and checking them and handing over to the Greeks, and they were going to sign these. And you must bear in mind that we have all this stuff laid out before us, and we're itemizing this, and they're ticking it off, and we're putting it to one side. And that ship had a foreign captain, and had a commander, and then had a second commander as a gunnery officer. It was well laded with braid, brass everywhere. And as you're going through these stores, you find many hands diving into it, and what's this and what's that. And we did find on one particular occasion some tape, and this tape was being unraveled and being held up to the nose, and the yards being measured, this kind of thing. And we had to tell him to put it down and for God's sake accept it. If it had said 50 yards of tape as sent out from our naval store, there's 50 yards there. They did not have to measure it. And we had all this kind of thing, that where the bomb went down through the after magazine, it narrowly missed a propeller shaft. We felt it was quite all right, and in our case we would have gone to sea at the end of 6 weeks, and that was it. The Greeks were not satisfied at all. They said it could well have impaired the efficiency of the propeller shaft. So they had to have the propeller shaft drawn out into the dock from the engine room, which is a major operation. Now, we didn't mind personally, because here it lengthened our stay jolly good, and we didn't mind this at all, but they were the most fussiest people imaginable. And every Thursday, I'll never forget this, every lunchtime we used to go out to the pub for a pint and a sandwich at a dockside pub. And when we come back in on a Thursday, the whole ship's company would be on the forecastle being harangued by the captain, who would stand up on the capstan. And he'd have the ship's company around him rather like Noel Kahn, and he would be then hyping them up and giving them the old battle cry. And at the end of it, they would be rousing cheers, and they would fight all the German army, navy and everyone. By the end of the week, though, it became rather different. But we had all this, and it was quite interesting. There was one particularly funny episode. Language difficulties didn't intrude too much, I did have one chappie come aboard one day, and he was a bit late. One of the Greek chief petty officers came aboard and looked at my watch, and I said, his name was Mimi. I said, "Ah, Mimi," and I looked at my watch. "Ah," he said, "I have met a beautiful woman." I said, "Yes, but I have been in Newcastle," said, "a beautiful woman. She is a widow, you know, very good." I said, "You mean a widow?" "No, no, she is very respectable. She is not like that at all. She is a widow." It was this kind of thing. Another situation where we, in the work in the dockyard offices, that's the shipyard offices, we had a couple of offices allocated to us, and there was bits of bookwork was carried out. And I'll never forget one instance there. All the brass nameplates had, of necessity, to be taken off the Urania, off the Bramham rather, and put in a great big sack. And these then were taken up into the office in the shipyard. And we had this great big sack, and we'd sit around a table, and I'll never forget this particular instance. It was a matter of the sack would be beside the table, and you'd dive your hand into the sack, and you would pull out a nameplate. And of course, it'd have the two screw holes each side, each end. And you would look at the English on one side, and the Greek would look at it, and you'd say, "Well, this is a mestic." And they'd go, "Mess. What is mess in Greek? Mess in Greek? No, we eat in Greek. We don't have a mess. No, you put down what is meant to your mess in Greek." "Oh, I don't know. Look, that's where they eat, eating place, you know, restaurant, what? You put it down." But anyway, it meant that he would then write on through a label what it was to be in Greek and attach it to the hole at the end of the nameplate and put it in another sack, and that would go away to be engraved in Greek and to be put back in its appointed place in the ship. Anyway, we are going laboriously through this, and it's a never-ending job, it seems. Hand in the sack, out would come a brass plate. And we'd say, "Well, that's so-and-so, you put that down." So, we've been going on for this for some while, and it's getting tedious, and it's warm in the office. And we're making our remarks to them, "Look, put that down. No, don't worry about it. Put that down. That will do." And the Greeks, for their part, were equally tired. And we had a commander opposite us on this day. And we got to the question of wardroom. And we said to him, "There you are, wardroom, officer's mess." "Officer's mess? No, we have had mess before." "No. Well, you put down it. It is, you know, an eating room." "No, it must be wardroom. We have no word for one." "Look, come on, it's getting on time now. Put this down." "Look," he says, "I am not going to put that down." So his English is very, very stilted, and he doesn't understand too much English. And we're saying, "You go on, you put that down." In the end, he just got hold of this thing, and he flung it on the table. He leapt to his feet. "Look," he said, you English, well, I do not know, but he said, "You think you know, you English, we know fucking nothing, but we know fuck all. I tell you, we are good." And it was that kind of thing that, of course, we had to hear. One can't say endure, but we were quite happy to do it. It had its funny moments. And then eventually the ship was commissioned, and we had the Greek ambassador up from London, we had various bishops and that sort of thing. Everyone got roaring drunk, and off they went. And regretfully, I had to go and go back to Devonport Barracks. And as happened with as happened after the Prince of Wales, as soon as you poke your nose in barracks, as I said earlier, the ones who were swiftest dealt with were, of course, the ERAs, with a watchkeeping certificate. but we weren't far behind, and I think I had about a fortnight's leave, and I was in barracks then, and this time I was in a bit longer, and I suppose I must have about neared the month then, and I went off then to join another job number building in Glasgow, and this was the Urania. My apologies on that. Oh dear, Urania was built at Vickers in Barrow, going north to all these places, in Barrow and Furness at Vickers Yard, and as with the Bremen, all I knew, of course, from Devonport was that I was going to a job number J, whatever it might have been, 1140, and you ask in the drafting office what it is, and they say, oh, we don't know, and it's, you know, up in Barrow or up in Glasgow or wherever, and off you go. Anyway, I arrived in Barrow and found, of course, that it's a destroyer. I had a fair idea it was going to be a destroyer. And in the same way that with Bramham, I had about 3 weeks before it completed. And this would be now coming into November, early December of 1943. The Christmas we spent in Barrow, we were complete, and the crew was aboard, and I can remember that we had the usual round of drinks and people getting tight and that sort of thing. But early in the new year, off we went then to the Isle of Man on our first sea trials, the speed trials. And I'll never forget this, because we went off out of Barrow to the Isle of Man, which is quite a short distance, and my staff, if you like to put it that way, on that one, because again I'm an OA on this, an ordnance officer, so only one of me, and I had this time what was called an ordnance mechanic, who was a petty officer chappy as well, and also another able seaman type, and these two and myself were about and one or two of the other petty officers were about the only ones who were not seasick. Quite remarkable, this, in that we went off at high speed through what is like a known as a short sea. The distance between the waves is so small that you get the kind of hovercraft effect we now know. We didn't know hovercraft, of course, in those days. But a hovercraft you tend to hit in rough weather, kind of bouncy. And I can think of nothing more likely to make anyone seasick than that. Anyway, after this, we then went off to Scupper Flow and started to do our workup routine, which quite honestly turned to be a bit traumatic, because here we were with the rest of the fleet, and we had to conform with all kinds of things that being with the fleet entails. When with the Bremen in Londonderry, you are largely an escort group involved in the Battle of the Atlantic, and of course in that situation you came in tied up alongside the wall in Londonderry, and you counted each other and you said, oh dear, where's so and so, and this sort of thing as ships were sunk. In Scupper Flow, of course, you were part of a great with battleships and carriers around, and you tend to be rather well, a small fry in that respect. But I remember doing all these shoots and getting heartily fed up there, and it was with some relief when we left Scapper Flow after doing a little bit of a shunt in one or two convoys, not very great ones, around to Iceland, that sort of thing, but we went off out to the Mediterranean. And we thought at first that we were going to get involved in with all the happenings up around Italy, but as we arrived in the Mediterranean, we now, we see that, I'm trying to think now when Anzio and Salerno and we thought we were going to go there, but as we made our way up, as if we were diverted to go to Alexandria, where the Greek Navy had mutinied, and we went to Alexandria and found ourselves in Alexandria Harbour for 6 weeks opposite a Greek destroyer, and we just had to train our guns on her and just remain in that position, and we just could walk down one side of the ship, not on the, I can't recollect, I think it was, we could only go on the port side because they were apt to take pot shots if you went down the starboard side. And this mutiny went on for about 6 weeks, and then finally petered out, and we did one or two excursions then around the Crete. I remember going after, we went after a U-boat or submarine around there, but it was one of, well, in wartime terms, rather cushy.
You don't give the impression that the Greek naval mutiny amounted to much.
No, it doesn't. As far as I remember, it didn't. And the whole thing, because we were taken away, we went off on one or two operations, as I said, around Crete, and that was it. And we were then brought back from there for D-Day. And this is when, really, the excitement starts up again, in that I can remember steaming across the Bay of Biscay with about, there must have been four of us. I think the Foresight was one of them, one of the old F boats. But I can remember looking, as I came up out of the after screen one day and looking back and seeing these almost exactly as you see on the newsreel, with the bow waves coming from them as we were steaming northwards. But anyway, we went to Scapa Flow. We had no idea what was going on. And of course, this would be then late May in 1944. And we got to Scapa Flow, and we tied up alongside the oiler, and immediately, of course, we're alongside the oiler, so out come all the various bottles, and dare I say, ought not to say this perhaps, but this is perhaps the stored rum, which of course was quite a legal thing to do. But then the news came down from the bridge, and I'll never forget this. The first lieutenant said, we're not going to proceed any further, we're going to proceed to Portsmouth to give leave. And of course this was a great cheer, and this was great heartiness, and off we went to Portsmouth to give leave. And as far as I remember, we had about 4 days leave, and we then began to get the idea, we certainly beginning to dawn on us, that now this is all part of gathering for something quite big. Because as we came down here, everything was gathering, and we could see what, in fact, ships were gathering here. And after leave, we then went to anchor out off Yarmouth, Isle of Wight. And we anchored out there, and we were there for about a week. And I can remember, in fact, that our stores were running down. The canteen manager was in our mess. There were only four of us in our mess at that time. This is a chief's mess in the Urania. We all had smaller cubby holes. And he was in despair because, of course, of getting stores. And, of course, you couldn't get stores down to us at Yarmouth, Isle of Wight.